It's Morning Edition on KUT 90.5 and KUT.org. I'm Jennifer Staten. Texas officials are actively trying to investigate families with transgender children for child abuse. That's because they may be seeking what's called gender-affirming care. It's an issue that's been tied up in courts. It's also an issue that has left many Texans asking simple questions about the back and forth in courts and what they're even fighting about. KUT's Andrew Weber has been covering this issue locally, and he joins me now. Good morning, Andrew.
Good morning, Jen.
All right, Andrew, so starting out, what exactly did the state do, and what is their goal?
So last month, Attorney General Ken Paxton issued a legal opinion classifying really any health care for trans and non-binary youth as child abuse. It's very important to note his opinion is non-binding, so it's not written in the law. It's not connected to the state's family code, which defines child abuse. It's just his opinion. And a couple days later, Governor Greg Abbott directed the state's Child Welfare Agency to act on that opinion and investigate families who may be seeking this health care for their children. Paxton and Abbott's arguments are that this health care sterilizes children and that children aren't in their right mind to make decisions and transition, and that ultimately gender-affirming care should be put to a stop. And the ACLU and Lambda Legal sued the state to block these investigations and let kids get gender-affirming care.
So, Andrew, I feel like that term, gender-affirming care, is a very broad term. Tell us, what exactly does gender-affirming care mean?
It's basically any care that allows someone to transition and better express their gender identity, which is just how they feel in their own body. And that may not be aligned with the sex they were assigned at birth. So when that happens, when folks have that sort of incongruence, the uncertainty and distress caused by that is called gender dysphoria. And the treatment of gender dysphoria can take a lot of forms. At the simplest level, kids who are experiencing this start transitioning and go through what's called social transition. And that's just essentially just letting a kid be a kid, like letting them be called what they want and letting them dress however they want and act however they want. That's it. That's what most kids go through until they reach adolescence. To get a better perspective on this, I spoke with Jonah DeChance. He's a researcher with the Trevor Project, which is a leading nonprofit that specializes specifically in helping LGBTQ plus youth get mental health treatment and support. And he says that for trans and non-binary folks, or really anyone with gender dysphoria, they face a higher risk of poor mental health outcomes, but that's also really dependent on the environment in which they grow up. It's not that these folks are endemically going to face these issues. It's just that sometimes the environment in which they're in, they may face a lot of harassment that could bring on anxiety. And that social affirmation, that idea of treating someone the way they would like to be treated and calling them what they want to be called, really, really does go a long way.
So what we see is that, you know, lots of different findings around, you know, when young people report being discriminated against, when they report low levels of support from family, those tend to increase their suicide risk. And then alternatively, we also see that when young people report being affirmed, when they have access to adults who are supportive of their identity, when folks in their life use their pronouns or their name correctly, we then see that suicide risk go down. And so that is sort of the big picture story of the research we do a lot here at Trevor.
So Andrew, what medical options are included in gender-affirming care?
Gender-affirming medical care includes what are called puberty blockers, hormone-based treatment, or surgical procedures to allow someone to transition into their gender identity. I spoke with Dr. Jane Ray. She's a pediatric endocrinologist, and she's been doing this work for 45 years in Central Texas. I should note, in a lot of my coverage of this issue, it's been kind of frustrating because a lot of the major, you know, hospital administrators and healthcare providers in Central Texas haven't really wanted to speak with me on the record for this because of that threat of legal action from the state. But Dr. Ray is 78, and she joked that she's 78. If she gets investigated, she can just retire. But she's been prescribing puberty blockers for years, and she says it's a pretty simple and reversible regimen.
What we do is at the time of puberty is shut off those hormones so the person doesn't convert to the sex that they feel that they are not.
So that regimen has been roundly supported by pretty much every major medical association for youth with gender dysphoria. And Dr. Ray explains that it's not a choice. That's come up a lot in a lot of these discussions. It's a valid condition that's been researched and vetted, and there are standards of care for healthcare professionals and for patients who are just trying to address it.
And it's not something that the child chooses. You know, they don't just think, well, let me make my life complicated by pretending to be the other sex.
After puberty blockers, folks can seek hormone therapy and surgical options, which are less reversible if they want, but that's only after years of care. It's really, really important to understand that the state right now is more or less talking about trans kids in this directive. Both Paxton in his opinion and Abbott in his directive, his memo, emphasize specifically genital mutilation, which suggests that children are receiving these less reversible options for healthcare, like gender-affirming surgery, but trans kids aren't undergoing that treatment. Dr. Ray wanted to emphasize that this kind of surgical care isn't being provided to children.
The surgery is a form of gender-affirming care, but we do not do that surgery unless they are adults. As far as genital surgery, that doesn't occur until they're adults.
All right. So, Andrew, what's next with this directive? We mentioned that it's winding its way through courts, but what does this mean for parents?
There is a lot of uncertainty. The Attorney General last week appealed directly to the Supreme Court, the state Supreme Court, to let these investigations go ahead while this legal challenge winds its way through the court. And I've talked to a handful of families from South Texas, from Central Texas, from North Texas, and there's just a lot of just really palpable sort of anxiety, and folks are really on edge. Last week, I spoke with a woman named Lindsay. She's a mom here in Austin who has a trans child who just turned 8. And she says this sort of legal back and forth has been really, really hard for her and her daughter.
The way to like educate people about trans healthcare issues is really to talk about it and show everybody like, hey, we're just normal families. This is just healthcare. Like, here's a little bit about our story. I mean, that's been my experience, is like when people hear your story, they get it, you know. But in the same sense, like putting ourselves out there is bringing harm upon us. It's just been a really, really scary time to be a Texan.
And also, it's worth noting that these sorts of, this directive and these sorts of attacks on trans youth have a demonstrable effect. Jonah Deschamps with the Trevor Project says they've received more calls in Texas and other states that have been sort of restricting or trying to restrict trans healthcare for kids.
And we did a poll with Morning Consult, and we found that 85% of trans and non-binary youth, and up to a third of LGBTQ youth more broadly, say that recent debates about state laws restricting the rights of trans folks have negatively impacted their mental health. So, yeah, it's hard for us to sort of assign that relation, like we can't assign a causal relationship with our data, but we are anecdotally hearing from young people, from parents, from families, and from folks on the ground that this is creating a lot of distress. And a lot of fear and anxiety among trans and non-binary youth.
Well then, Andrew, so what is next for this directive? You mentioned it's facing a legal challenge.
Yes, ma'am. So the governor's directive is being challenged in court by the ACLU and Lambda Legal, and opponents are arguing that it essentially circumvented the legislative process. This was a bill that lawmakers tried to pass over the summer, but it failed. So their argument is that this directive sort of bypasses, it's sort of an end around for that whole process. And they sued, and successfully sued, I should say, to block these investigations. But Attorney General Ken Paxton, like I said, appealed that decision to the state Supreme Court. So for now, it's just kind of waiting out that legal process.
Andrew Weber is a reporter for KUT, covering, among other issues, the state's restriction of transgender health care. Andrew, thank you for joining me today.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you for having me, Jen.
You can keep up with more coverage of this issue and other news at KUT.org.